You are listening to the Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, where we discuss myth, math, spirituality, philosophy, and much, much more. www.thesinkbook.com. Greetings, everyone. I'm your host, Marty Leeds. Welcome once again to the podcast. This show is dedicated to exploring spirituality, science, and everything in between, and I hope that you will continue to join me as we move forward, as we are going to get to hear from some of the most interesting, inspiring, and enlightening people of our current era. A few quick announcements. I have recently uploaded these podcasts to YouTube, and they will be posted within a week or two of the original cast, posted from the SyncBook site, and there will be some video casts coming out in the future as well, so look forward to that. I also recently uploaded a few videos of my own, one I did with David Whitehead for the Modern Knowledge Tour, a video called Oneness and the 42 Principles of the Egyptian Mat, as well as a new song I wrote called Bear Creek, and these are all found on youtube.com/MartyLeeds33. And last but certainly not least, don't forget to check out the SyncBook Summit in Olympia, Washington this August 8th and 9th. Info is available at the SyncBook site, and that's just thesyncbook.com, O-L-Y 2014, so thesyncbook.com/OLY2014, and you can get all the information there. And tonight's guests are Freemason and author Richard Cassaro, and our musical guest is Jamalia. This show is brought to you by the SyncBook Radio. Check out all the wonderful podcasts, 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Middle Chamber, and Synchronize. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook events can be found at www.thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends and please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge as it helps us keep the lights on and helps keep our microphones humming. And as always, thank you for your support. Our guest tonight is Richard Cassaro. Classicist Richard Cassaro is a specialist on esoteric symbolism and is the author of the book Written in Stone, Decoding the Secret Masonic Religion Hidden in Gothic Cathedrals and World Architecture. The book uncovers a lost wisdom tradition that was practiced globally in antiquity, found memorialized in pyramids, triptychs, and identical images worldwide. The central tenets of this tradition have been perpetuated in Western secret societies and fraternal brotherhoods. Cassaro holds a degree from New York City's Pace University, where he studied journalism and philosophy, and his websites are richardcassaro.com, that's C-A-S-S-A-R-O, and deepertruth.com. So without further ado, let's get pious with Richard Cassaro. Richard, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, Marty, I really appreciate you asking me. That's great. Thanks so much.
Yeah, there's so much I want to cover in this interview. We only have an hour, of course, but I want to hit on a few really important topics that you cover in your research on your website and things like that. Can you give us a little introduction as to who you are and what you do and your websites and that?
Yeah, I'm Richard Cassaro, richardcassaro.com and deepertruth.com. I've been researching pretty much my whole life. You know, I was into, like a lot of your listeners, into the idea that pyramids all around the world and mummies all around the world and all that is a indicator that all the ancient indigenous peoples all shared something, whether it's the same heritage or the same religion or whatever it would be. That idea always fascinated me. It's been around for a long time. It's been around since the 1800s, at least. The Victorian scholars all believed that. Modern scholars don't anymore, but the Victorians definitely did. And since I was in high school, I was collecting all types of information about this, and I was always very surprised that modern archaeologists and scholars are saying that that there is no connection between these ancient cultures. And of course, the idea of Atlantis was followed by the Victorian scholars, and that's poo-pooed upon by the modern establishment, and I never got that at all. And so shortly after college, I decided I was going to travel all around everywhere I could in the world to find and learn from, you know, guides and local scholars and that type of thing. And I pretty quickly found a lot of good information that just proved to me personally that all the ancient cultures were connected. They all had the same spiritual wisdom, you know, ancient wisdom, whatever you want to call it. And one thing that I've found that I wrote my book about is that in addition to pyramids and mummies and things like that, all the ancient cultures, all the ancient pyramid cultures had the same temples, the same shape temples. And I call that the triptych. three doorways, with the doorway in the middle being wider and sometimes taller than the outer two. So the concept of three and triptych is found everywhere. From the Mayans and the Aztecs down to the Egyptians, and you find it in China, and it's pretty much all over the ancient world. So that's why I wrote my book. And what I found after that was that a lot of the secret societies that had emerged in the shortly after the time of Christianity and around that era, understood the triptych, and they preserved the triptych in their architecture and in their books and things like that. One of the most important of these secret societies was the Masonic Fraternity. They designed and built all the Gothic cathedrals of Europe. I've always been drawn to Gothic cathedrals. So in a nutshell, basically that's who I am and what I've found and the what. There's a lot more to it, and I've got a lot more books that I'm hoping to be writing in the next few years. And I have a documentary film that I'm working on and a couple of DVDs and things. But right now I don't have a tremendous amount of time, but little by little I plan on putting more and more stuff out. I have one book, it's called, as you know, Written in Stone, Decoding, what is it, Decoding the Secret Masonic Religion Hidden in Gothic Cathedrals and World Architecture. And that's pretty much a book about everything that I just talked about. How's that?
That's perfect. That's perfect. Yeah, I want to get into the triptych a little bit more later in the hour here. And I also want to talk a little bit. One of the things I want to hit on is the idea of a lost civilization or a mother culture. But first and foremost, let's lay some groundwork here. You're a Freemason, first and foremost. Actually, let me I got a little story for you. I moved back to Oregon. I was away for about 3 or 4 years, and I reconnected with a friend. And I went up and I saw her. I was like, "Hey, how are you? It's good to see you." Yeah. And so she was like, "Hey." And in this time, I had written my books and lecture series and things. And she's asked, "Okay, well, what are your books about?" And I was like, "Well, okay, I uncovered this mathematical structure for the English alphabet, and it's based on a Freemason symbol." And she goes, "Whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa! What's a Freemason?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so it was just kind of this. I was just kind of stunned. I was like, "Oh, wow! Where do we go from here?" So let's lay some foundation here. What are the Freemasons? Why you're obviously a Freemason. Why did you join the Fraternal Brotherhood? And maybe we could talk about maybe what's happened to this organization a little bit.
Yeah, cool. This is it's funny because I gotta be honest. I mean, I did join the Freemasons, about a decade ago. What are we in 2014? Maybe a little bit more, almost 15 years ago. And I didn't follow any of the rules, and I never did what I was supposed to, and I don't really go to meetings or anything like that. And I'll tell you why I joined it. This is basically what the Freemasons today are something completely different than what the Freemasons were founded for. In a nutshell, all the ancient cultures around the world, like I said, had the same, pyramid constructions and the same architecture, mummies, things like that, and triptych temples. When the church emerged and wanted to consolidate their power, they kind of suppressed this ancient universal religion, this ancient indigenous belief system that was prevalent in all the ancient cultures. They suppressed it. A group of people went underground with it and tried to keep it alive. Those were the original Freemasons. These were the origins of secret societies. Secret societies existed because they wanted to preserve the ancient, authentic, universal religion and keep the torches of it from dying out. They saw what the church was doing. They needed to preserve this ancient wisdom before it was lost forever. They did it for centuries. They preserved it in secret. Around the 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th centuries, they started to build all the Gothic cathedrals. And what they did was they encoded the triptych into the Gothic cathedrals. They encoded this ancient wisdom into the architecture. And a lot of architecture is basically it's like a book in stone. And it tells a story, the shape and the numbers and all that type of thing. The shape of the arches, the number of arches, different all everything that has everything in architecture is symbolic of a story. And a lot of the Gothic cathedrals, or almost all of them, have the ancient wisdom preserved in them. And that's what I say in my book. And then as time continued, the founding fathers of America, they were Freemasons as well. As time continued, I'd say somewhere in the past 100, 150 years, the fraternity was hijacked. It was hijacked. It was basically taken over by a group of people who had bigger plans, plans that I guess you could say are manifested today in the big corporations, manifested today in the complete control of the world by the banking systems and by the pharmaceutical companies and by all these power groups that are basically controlling the world and the money supply of the world. So the Freemasons today are basically, I'm not saying they're bad people because most of them are not, but it's a powerful organization, and in the inner circles, I'm sure that there's guides there that are doing things that that people in the outer circles where I am have no clue about. And it's not that they're doing it with Freemasonry. It's like they're just using it as a ground to get things done. But you know, that's why I say I'm kind of uncomfortable. I'm not. I really don't really go to meetings. I don't really participate too much. I was told that I couldn't give lectures because I didn't participate, but that's just what I do. I give lectures, and people ask me all the time, you know, come to our lodge and give a lecture. That's all I do. I'm really just interested because a lot of people join Freemasonry because they believe that correctly that the order was founded to preserve ancient wisdom, and they feel a calling like I did to discover the ancient wisdom. The reason I joined is because as I said, I had traveled a lot in the world, and I found these ancient triptych temples all over the place. Then I started to see triptychs in modern architecture. I started to see triptychs in the architecture of Europe in the 1700s, 1800s, 1900s, and I started to see the triptych everywhere. And then I learned that that the triptych is strongly connected to the Freemasons. A lot of Freemasons' lodges have triptychs in their facades. A lot of the buildings that are associated with the Freemasons have triptychs. So that's where I made the connection. That's where I say, you know, so I joined for the right reasons. I joined because it was a calling, and I joined because I knew that authentic Freemasonry is related to the triptych. Authentic Freemasonry is a building tradition, has nothing to do with taking over the world and the banking and the pharmaceuticals that is, you know, I think is associated with it in more modern times. And I guess you could say that my role now is just to do as much as I can to get Freemasonry back on track, and hopefully, you know, in some way be instrumental in kicking out the hijackers that over the past 100 and 150 years have taken it over.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, that's an extremely noble thing that you're doing there too, because it does seem that this organization has been infiltrated, and there's sort of some sort of like central control faction that is using this organization. I have a quote here. I actually got this. You had posted this on your Facebook page. It's just a perfect quote to really kind of sum up for people that have a lot of misconceptions about Freemasonry and kind of dispelling the myth of Freemasonry. It's from this is from Julius Evola. And it says, when a certain spiritual or traditional organization falls into such a state of degeneration that its representatives know very little of its true inner foundation, as in modern Freemasonry, a spiritual void has been created that can be filled through infiltrations by subversive forces. These forces, while leaving the appearances unchanged, use the organization for totally different purposes, which at times may be even the opposite of those that were originally its own.
Beautiful.
Yeah, so I got that from your Facebook page. I thought it was just perfect quote to sum up really what's kind of happened with Freemasonry. And so, yeah, I just feel like it's very noble that we're gonna, you know, we have people that are going back into this and saying, no, we're gonna take this spiritual. Well, I mean, basically, what is it? It's a recapitulation of the Egyptian and Grecian mystery schools. We're gonna take this ancient wisdom and we're gonna take it back for ourselves. So.
Exactly. Yep, that's exactly it. And you want to know something, Marty? This is the most incredible thing. When I go to a lodge and I give, you know, I see everybody. The last lecture I gave was about a month ago in Long Island. Everybody was over 60 years old, and I was like, oh no, you know, this is they're not going to be into this. You know, I think there was about 70 people there. And, you know, I was just, I had this preconception in my mind that older people are closed-minded, and they're, you know, especially in Masons, I mean, they just go, they just want to smoke cigarettes and talk and hang out and go on fishing trips. Man, they were into it, and they loved it. At the end of my lecture, they were just standing up and clapping, and they didn't stop. And then they invited me downstairs for some beers, and we were talking, and they were like, wow, you know, everything you said made sense. I knew there was something deeper about Masonry. We're so glad you came. People, you know, came up to me, and they've already invited me for, you know, can you come to my own lodge? I want you to give the same exact lecture at my own lodge now. And, you know, that was really surprising, because usually it's the younger crowd that are more into the esoteric, you know, stuff, and that are more curious about the symbolism and that type of thing. But lately I'm starting to see, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but lately I'm starting to see that even the older crowds, man, they're really into it, and they're really sensing and feeling that that there's more in Masonry than just the basic surface stuff that it's become, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think that you have a way of really kind of elucidating all these things in a very terse, very straightforward, very easily understandable way. And that's one of the things that I really enjoyed about your book. To me, your book, Written in Stone, is it's a book for beginners. Like, if you don't know anything about esotericism or symbolism or lost civilizations or philosophy, things like that, this is a book for you. But this is also a book for someone that might be a little bit more advanced in this knowledge. So I think you have a very interesting way of presenting this information where it really allows people to connect the dots in a really great way. So
thanks so much. I really appreciate it. And you know, I love your books too. You know, very, very fascinating stuff. I've always admired people who had mathematical minds, because I don't have one at all. And it's something, you know, as I have more and more time that I'm going to be devoting to my books, you're going to get more and more emails from me picking your brain about math and, you know, hey, Marty, do me a favor, take a look at this and see if you can find something mathematical about it. So give me for that.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Well, since we're talking about math here, let's hit on the triptych. I mean, I know you talked about it a little bit, but let's talk about the triptych, where maybe some of the cases is where we see this in architecture. Maybe give some examples of that, and then maybe we could talk a little bit about the philosophy or the spiritual philosophy that you see behind the triptych.
Yeah, you know, in Masonry, the concept, the great secret of Masonry, and you'll read this in all types of books from the 20th, 19th centuries, is the number three. Okay, they all say three is the great mystery number. Three is the great number of Freemasonry. It's all about three, 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 three. So that's really important to know getting into this. So if you look at, for example, so the ancient temples, like I was saying earlier about the pyramid cultures, the ancient triptych temples have three doors. One big door in the middle, and then two equal-sized doors on either side. And it's impossible to prove, because I don't have anything in front of me to show, but just to explain it, the twin outer doors stand for duality, the right side and the left side, the sun and the moon. All the ancient civilizations believed that the world is made of duality. Without the concept of the shadow, there can't be the sun. Without the sun, there can't be the moon. Without the day, there can't be the night. Without the male, there can't be female, light and dark, good and evil. So the idea is everything in the world has an opposite. Everything in nature has some type of an opposite, and that together they comprise a totality. And the one thing that we should do as humans is to embrace both sides of the totality. That's what the yin-yang concept is all about in China, for example. I mean, every ancient civilization had a symbol like that, but let's just take that one because a lot of people are very familiar with it. I know you are too. Mm-hmm. The yin and the yang is a circle, which is a complete whole. And it's divided into twin parts. One side is the yin, which is symbolizing all the female and dark, et cetera, et cetera, left-hand side. And the yang is the white and the right and the male and all. So basically it's a totality, which is the circle, and it's divided in half. One side is yin, one side is yang. And the triptych, the twin outer doors, are symbolic of these pairs of opposites. So when you look at a human being is symmetrical. And according to all ancient cultures, every single ancient culture, from the Egyptians to the Mayans, the pre-Inca civilization, all of them believed that the right side of the human body was the yang side, and the left side of the human body was the yin side. And so if you look at the triptych, the two outer doors represent the twin sides of the human body. What does the middle door stand for then? The middle door is the origin of the two. It's the source of the two. The middle door is the spirituality that lies beneath the physicality of the duality of the opposites. So the middle door is the source. It's the part of you that was never born and will never die. It's the part of you that created the duality. It's the circle in the yin-yang concept. A yin-yang is actually a trinity. It's not just duality, which most people don't realize. It's yin and yang. Those are the twin sides of the triptych. And then there's a circle which unite the two. The triptych, the middle part of the triptych, the big doorway in the middle, is that circle. It's the part that unites the twin outer doors. And in your human persona, in your body and yourself, your soul is the part of you that's much older than the duality of your left and right sides. It's what created you. You created yourself. Your soul created your body. And that's basically what the triptych is in a nutshell, what the triptych teaches. Now, we find that in every ancient culture, and then we find that in all the Gothic cathedrals. And that's where I made the connection that, because when Christianity arose, it suppressed this knowledge. And the cathedral builders sort of incorporated this architecture into their Gothic cathedrals, into the things that they constructed. So Gothic cathedrals are actually subversive buildings. They were created to preserve the triptych. If you look at all the Gothic cathedrals of Europe, almost all of them have the triptych in the entranceway. And that triptych is, and there's a lot of, in my book, I go into how all the surrounding architecture reveals exactly what I just said about the twin sides, the left and the right, and the opposites and the center. For example, the rose window of the Gothic cathedral lies directly above the middle door of the triptych. So does that make a lot of sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. I mean, this is, as far as I found as well, too, this is sort of the core philosophy that's at the bedrock of a lot of these spiritualities, that it's synthesizing the duality and allowing that trinity within the self almost to rise. I mean, this is, in one way, this is the triangle, right? As you were saying, the apex of that triangle is the point that never dies. It's the infinite point, and then you have that left and right. So I actually just opened your book here. You had a quote from this is the Aphorisms of Zosimus, and talking exactly what you're saying here. It says, "Above the celestial things, below the terrestrial, by the male and the female, the work is accomplished. Join the male and female, and you will find what you are seeking." So, and we see this within Buddhism and the Bodhi path, and or the middle way, not the left way, not the right way, the middle way. So it seems like this concept is not something that was just created by a bunch of savages in the past. It's this was something that is at a fundamental within the human experience, right?
Absolutely, yep. And you find it everywhere. Like I was saying, you find it in every indigenous culture, and the fact. And here's what could, we could stem to Atlantis with this. The fact that you find it in all the ancient cultures, well, how is that? How is that possible?
Exactly.
Is it that humans are similar and we, found something deep inside all over the world? Yeah, that's possible. Or is it another possibility is that there was, even before recorded history, there was a mother culture or a united civilization like in Atlantis that's talked about by not just Plato, but a lot of the Greek philosophers and classical historians. Was there an ancient empire or a mother culture or a golden age where all this wisdom was shared and known to all the peoples alive? And through maybe after some cataclysm or some type of catastrophic or cataclysmic event, maybe this thing disappeared, this mother culture disappeared, but remnants of it remained in different parts of the world, like the Tower of Babel. Maybe that's a memory of it. Like the concept of the Tower of Babel is, men were united, they were all building the same tower, and then God came down and said, this is not good, and threw down the tower and spread people all over the world and changed the languages. Mm-hmm. And it's is it possible that something like that is what Atlantis was, where there was this great empire, but then something threw it down and, people were dispersed throughout the world, but they retained their pyramid culture. They retained their triptych concept. They retained their idea that a totality is comprised of opposites and and we can apply that to the macrocosm and the universe, and to the microcosm of our bodies and our physical and spiritual selves too. These are all great questions, and they're all worth investigating.
Yeah, and this central principle that we see that is embedded within the triptych of uniting the dualities and things like that. To me, it's like it doesn't even if there was a civilization, or if there wasn't a lost civilization, you either have this lost civilization that the entire earth was populated at one point, and they were all sharing this ancient wisdom. Even if that isn't true, you have something inherent in the human condition or human reality that allows people to resonate with these ideas. So it doesn't even matter to me if it's like, oh, this was just information that was passed on by the Egyptians touring around in boats before the last ice age or something. You know, that sort of idea. I think that this is what you're pointing out is something that's central to human spirituality and human sacred science.
Totally, and that's what makes it great, you know. And it's applicable, just it's applicable today just as much as it was 5,000 years ago, because it's telling us truths and facts and things like that about ourselves, about, like you say, our human condition. And in my opinion, it's being suppressed today. In my opinion, it's being kept under wraps, kept under cover, because the powers that be, you know, the corporate powers and the governments and the families that rule the world, they don't want people to be empowered. They want people to be, you know, scared and sort of ignorant and fall asleep, believing the news, believing everything they see on TV, believing all the commercials, buying all the products, buying into the idea that we need to work 60 hours a week in order to live on this planet and that type of thing. And that's how they keep us herded and in control. Part of the puzzle right there, as far as I'm concerned, because once you get this wisdom, you sort of awaken and you're just, you know, you kind of reconnect with nature and you say, you know, this is a beautiful world. It's a miraculous place. I don't want to waste my life working on some dead-end job just because they tell me that the more money I make, the more prestige I'm going to have and the more friends and the nicer life I'm going to lead. I don't believe that. And I think more and more people are awakening to that. That's what this universal religion of the triptych teaches.
Yeah. I mean, do you feel like there's some sort of like calculated or organized or like, you know, I guess deliberate burying of our past, a burying of these principles? It's almost like there's a control faction, whatever, that is coveting power, and they are keeping this information from the general public, from, you know, average everyday people like you and I. That's what I see. I mean, is that you see that this has happened time and time again throughout history, and we see it kind of in full force right now, huh?
Yeah, I totally, absolutely, positively do. And in everything, they're everywhere, and it's not just one part. You know, it's not like just they're in control of the news or the media. They're in control of Hollywood and the television programming, and they're in control of medicine and the banks, and they're in control of, you know, it's everywhere. And you have to really be very, very careful, because, you know, I feel bad for the young people, you know, coming up, and that's partly why, you know, people say, well, you know, you're going to black label yourself, and are you sure you want to do this and write these types of books and have your name on your website like that? Why don't you use a different name? And no, this is what I want to do, man. The young people really need this. And I can't tell you how many young people write me emails, and it's all about them. You know, look at what they grow up with. They grew up with like Jersey Shore, the television, some of these television shows, you know, the Housewives. What is that? The one of the Housewives of Atlanta.
Oh, wherever, right?
All of these great, the TV is unbelievable. The movies, they're unbelievable. Look at the music that they're coming up with, you know, what the things that they're learning, the video games. It's all bad. You know, I don't see a lot of good there, you know. So that's the messages that these kids are getting. People are like, oh, I hate the kids. They're just such assholes. You know what? You can't say that, because you got to open up to them, and you got to give them a chance, and you got to speak to them, and you got to help them, because nobody else is. They're certainly not being helped by schools. They're certainly not being helped by Hollywood and all the music industry. Nobody's helping them, you know. So of course they're going to grow up like that, angry, disrespectful, because that's what they see on TV, and that's how they're going to be. So, you know, if they hopefully they come onto a website or listen to a show like this, and they start to say, wow, maybe things are a little bit different than I thought, and maybe they'll open up a little bit. And it's all about the young people, and that's what we're getting up in years, and we got to really turn back and look at these kids and help them, and they're going to help us in return, and it's going to be a better place, I think.
Yeah, I mean, speaking about the youth, that's the one thing that I found when I really started investigating these things. And one of the things that you show in your book, when you explain something like duality, hey, there's good and evil, there's male and female, there's left and right, this is remarkably simple to understand. And when I first came across this, I was probably in my maybe late 20s or something like that before I'd ever really been exposed to this. And I find it so interesting that it's like, this is something that the younger generation could really understand if they aren't force-fed this shit on TV, and then instead were replaced with information like this. I think we'd be living in a completely different world.
I love it. I totally agree. You know, every time I see a young person, you know what I tell them? I always say, do you know what a star is? And most of the time, I'd say 70 to 80% of the time, they have no clue that it's a distant sun. Mm-hmm. Planets possibly circling around it, just like there are planets circling around our star. And I just tell them, and they're blown away by it. They're blown away. And I feel like I awaken something inside of them, and, you know, they're going to hopefully, you know, move, you know, continue to try to, you know, study it, or maybe Google it or watch a video about it. Maybe that will lead to something else, and that something else will lead to even bigger and better things. But, yeah, I think that, you know, another thing I tell young people, too, is, you know, what our society teaches you, and this, you know, check this one out, Marty, this is good. They teach you that, you know, you can have it all. No, you can't. You can't. Because you can't have all yang, and that's what our society wants. I just want a yang life. You're not going to get it. There's no such thing. You can't, because you can't have all yang. You have to have some yin. Otherwise, there's no such thing as existence. Like I was saying to you before, I was having a bad day, but you know what? That's good, because tomorrow's going to be a good day. You know, it's the black and white checkerboard floor of Freemasonry. Mm-hmm. Authentic Freemasonry. A lot of the Gothic cathedrals have a black and white checkerboard floor. Why? Because that's duality. We walk on that every day. Every day can't be a white square day. Every day can't be a yang day. There have to be yin days in there. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any existence. We wouldn't know what good is without evil. We wouldn't know what day is without night. We wouldn't know what right is without left, up without down, the crest of a wave or the trough of a wave, either the sunny side of the mountain or the dark side of the mountain. So, you know, I think telling young people that it can't all be yang is important, that you have to have a little bit of yin. Or here's another good way to look at it. When people are like, oh, something really bad happened, and I say, that's good. You know why? Because that means something good is about to happen. And that's kind of uplifting, and, you know, it's something that we all have to keep in mind. And it's a good way, I think, to, you know, go through your days and you know, when some, because bad stuff happens, you know, but good stuff also happens. And usually, you know, the good stuff, usually things always turn out okay, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of that concept of, like, you know, when you have that bad day, it's you're drawing the arrow back, but eventually you're going to let go and that thing is going to fly. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And this is also when you're talking about the Masonic hall and the floor, the checkerboard floor, the black and white. And this is the duality. But this really actually comes back to the Trinity once again, because you have the black and white of the floor, but you have the floor as well. Just like in the yin yang, you have the circle encapsulating those two yin yang, the black and white. So really, we're talking about, you know, the three once again. Mm-hmm. So speaking of three, you have in your book this whole section about, I forget what it's called, but something recognizing the Trinity or something like that. But you go and you look at all of these different cultures and look where the Trinity, this Holy Three, shows up. I'm just going to name a few here. You pointed out the fleur-de-lis, the shamrock. There's a Mayan symbol. I'm not sure how you pronounce this, but Tenochtitlan or something. I apologize. But there's triquetra, excuse me, Odin's horn, the trefoot, the Sicilian trinacria, the triskel, the valknut, the trident. I mean, again and again and again, all across the world, you see this three. And this is, once again, this is that idea of really uplifting yourself spiritually, philosophically, to your higher self, harnessing that inner power within you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key, you know, is to know that you, that's what the ancients all knew, is that you, as you know yourself, are not the final term of your being. Mm-hmm. That you, as you know yourself, when you look in the mirror, you see something temporary, because that's exactly what you're looking at, is something temporary. But behind that, behind the visible plane, behind the physicality, there's something eternal. There's something that doesn't die. There's something that is not dependent on time. And that's what all these symbols are there to teach. They're there to say that, you know, there's an eternal part of you. And that's not what you're seeing when you look in the mirror. What you're seeing is something that's temporary, and you're here to enjoy. You're here to relax and have fun and have an adventure and do, laugh and cry and be happy and be sad, to experience it. And that's what these symbols all sort of kind of remind you, to always remember that all this is important, but it's not ultimately important. Ultimately you're going to die, but the physical part of you will die, and the eternal part of you will continue to survive. And that's, and I know you're into Joseph Campbell too. I'm into Joseph Campbell, Alan Watts. Those are probably two of my greatest teachers, and they were spot on in their understanding that the ancients believed that, and all these symbols taught that. And I learned a lot from them, and that's why I say, I'm so positive about these symbols. I've studied them my whole life, and that's what they teach, and that's why they're such great symbols. Because, as you point out, they're not just from one culture; they're all over the world, and especially the ancient world. And that's what makes this all so great.
Yeah, it's there's just a there's an irrefutability to it, in my opinion, when you look cross-culturally, or do your interdisciplinary studies, comparative mythology, you really find this sort of base of knowledge, this philosophy that's irrefutable, that really resonates with the interior of your soul. And I think that a lot of these things, you start recognizing these things the more and more the more and more you study them, right? I mean, obviously you've probably had many different sort of personal mystical experiences, synchronistic experiences on your own journey. I mean, have you?
Oh gosh, yeah. That's another big part of it, is the synchronicity. Just like you,
And
just
it
like
keeps the fuel. I mean, it's like fuel for the fire, right?
absolutely. Just like you said, when you're studying it and you're seeing these symbols that look so similar all over the ancient world, there's an irrefutability to it. I don't care what the most lettered scholar of Oxford says. It doesn't bother me that the guy at Yale who studied this for 25 years doesn't believe what I'm saying. I know it. I don't need his, he could be the greatest person, and he wrote all the great books, and he traveled all over. I don't care if he doesn't believe it or not, because I know it. I know, and it's not something that I believe. I know it, and that's probably why I wrote the book, and that's probably why, just say, it's like talking to you. You understand it. You know it too. You feel it. You know it. It's a part of you, and it's me too. And that's great stuff. That's great, great stuff. It's one of the most great things in my life, just like yours,
Yeah, I got a little story to tell you. I did the Free Your Mind conference in Philadelphia, and I had a day off on like Saturday or whatever, and I went to go visit the Basilica of Saint Peter and Paul. And I walk up to the thing, and I immediately thought of you. I was like, "Oh, there's Richard Cassero," because there's a damn triptych right there. And as I noticed it right away, I was like, "Oh, isn't that interesting?" But the thing that got the second thing I noticed was, and this is where these principles and ideas and philosophies are, they you start to really understand them and intuit them and see them in the physical world. As I'm walking up to the cathedral, I look and I look, and of course, once again, left door, right door, they're smaller, and then that center door is bigger. And guess which door was open? Not the left and not the center, but the right door. And I thought that was so just symbolic. It's like it was almost as if they were saying, getting back to this kind of idea of our modern culture trying to like bury our past and take control of the world and things like that. It's almost saying that, okay, this right door for the common people, that's for you. The people that really know this information, the center door, that's for them. And whether this was intentional or not, really, you start to see these things. And symbolically, it just made a lot of sense to me, because it was like it was one of those things that I recognized in my own interior. I was like, no, I belong going through that center door. That's my door, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So
Totally hear you. And like you say, with synchronicities is a big part of it, When you start to see those synchronicities, when you start to feel the synchronicities, and you're on the right track, you're on the path. I don't know why, but this whole year I had a friend of mine who last year he kept pointing out to me that every time he looked at the clock, it would be like 2:22 or 4:44. And sometimes we'd be on the phone, and I would say something, and he would say, "Wow, I totally hear you." And guess what, Rich? It's 4:44 right now. And for some crazy reason, this year it's happening to me almost every day, where I'm looking at the clock at a certain time, and it's 5:55, And you know, that's like a synchronicity. The synchronicities come when you know you're on the right track. And that's important because you want to, you know, when you start to feel like the life you're living is the life that you should be living, and that's a good thing. It's a positive feeling, and it gives you power. You know, it gives you this strong power, and it makes you feel like even bad things that are happening are good because they should be happening that way. Good
Cosmic
synchronicity.
validation in one respect, right?
Yep, cosmic validation, the idea that everything is the way it should be. We've all had that feeling like I shouldn't be doing this, or you know, I'm in a bad place right now, or you know, and it's a terrible feeling. It makes you feel cold and empty inside. And there's nothing like feeling like, you know what, I just did something good, or I should be doing this, or you know, I'm glad I'm doing this, or whatever it would be. Let me give you a cool synchronicity, and this is, I shouldn't really say that because on the thing here, but this is a great story. I was 22 years old, and I was traveling in Sicily. I'm Sicilian, actually. My blood is Sicilian. I was traveling by myself, and I took a train from Rome to Sicily. It's about 24 hours, and I had my music with me. I'm like you, I'm big into music. And I didn't want to take any books because it was a quick trip and I didn't want to lug a lot of books around. So I just wanted to look at the scenery and the landscape and listen to my music the whole trip. So I got there and, you know, cut a long story really short. It was time for me. I'll just make it even faster. I was taking a cab from when I got to Sicily, when I got to Palermo, I got into a cab. And he ripped me off big time. It should have been a 20-liter trip. This was way back when, before the euro. It should have been a 20-liter trip, and he shut off the meter and he charged me 150 lira, which is almost like taking a cab and thinking you're going to be charged 20 bucks and then him charging you 150. So I didn't have change. I only had 200s on me, and I had no choice but to give them to both. I didn't, you know, I didn't want. It was a strange country. I'm American. I don't want to have any trouble. But I was really angry. And he went into a store to get change. So, like a dumb punk kid, you know, I had a little knife on me, so I stuck his tire. And this, you know, was so loud. He came out of the store, and I thought he was gonna find out. And I felt bad about what I did when I did it, but I was really angry, and I was a pretty angry kid when I was in my early 20s. So, but he gave me my 50 change, and he went off, you know. And I told my cousin what I did, and he goes, "Oh no." He goes, "You really messed him up. Tires are so expensive here." And I really felt bad. I was like, you know what? I made a mistake. I really just felt bad about it. But you know, I said, "Well, how much are tires?" And I don't remember the exact number, but it was about 125, right? So on my way back to Rome, which was a couple days later, I remember sitting in the train and I was about to go back. The train was about to leave the station. I remember thinking, this is a 24-hour trip. Thank God I got my Walkman here because what would I do without this music? And about 10 minutes later, the thing broke. I don't know how, but it broke. And the whole trip, I had to suffer without any Walkman. And when I got finally to Rome, I wanted to buy a new one. And it was exactly 125, which was what he said the tire costed the poor cab driver whose tire I stuck. So you see how like I got what was coming to me, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a great story. And there are things like that that happen in your own life all the time. That I think that when you get studying these things, and maybe you can validate this or whatever, or concur, that all these things start happening more and more, and you start to recognize things that may have happened maybe 20 years ago or something like that are now just coming to fruition. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely, and that's
Yeah.
true too. I mean, karma can be instant, and it could take, like you said, 20 years to come full circle. It's just a matter of recognizing it. It's just a matter of being awake to it and aware of it, and then looking for the message in it. It happened to me when I was younger that bad things, like I just told you, would happen because it was teaching me. I'm from New York, you know. That's that. I was raised to be like that, to stand up for yourself. Don't let anybody take advantage of you. You know, fight for what's yours and don't be afraid and that type of thing. I just went a little bit overboard when I was in my late teens and early 20s. And it took a lot of synchronicities like that. Probably by the time I was 25, I really cooled out. I really cooled down. I was very, very, you know, I just started to read all the synchronicities and they were telling me to relax and enjoy life and enjoy other people, and you know, and that's it was all about synchronicities that taught me so much, and they still teach me today. Like you just said, I mean, things that happened a long time ago, I'm still remembering this. This is 20 years ago, and it's still as powerful to me now as it was back then, which is, and it's still telling me the same thing, which is, don't hurt anybody because you're only going to hurt yourself.
It's the lessons from the divine, and there's no greater lesson, right? So, we got about like 20 minutes left or so, and I really want to touch on the idea of the mother culture, basically the idea of a kind of a lost civilization. We could say Atlantis, these sorts of ideas. You feel that at one point there was some sort of well, mother culture, that the earth was populated by a global civilization that was sharing these ideas, right?
Yeah, absolutely. All the ancient cultures had it, no doubt.
So now, I mean, what do you think? Obviously, we have the idea of the flood. Obviously, the flood myth is universal. What do you think happened to this mother culture? Do you think it was the flood? Do you think it was maybe some sort of comet or something like that? And then how long do you think after this catastrophic event that obviously wiped out a massive amount of people at one point in our history, how long do you think it took before these civilizations started gaining this knowledge again? I mean, I know we can only speculate on it, but you
Right.
know.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's funny because as much as I'm into that and it's cool to think about and speculate, it's really just speculation. And I'm more into the actual facts of it, which is, how did all these symbols? Okay, look, all it's a fact that all these ancient cultures shared the same idea of three and totality is made up of a duality. So how did this happen? So there's a lot of different ways it could have happened. The way that I think is most plausible, because a lot of the ancient Greeks, philosophers and historians talked about it, was Atlantis. They named it, they talked about it. Plato, I mean, you don't get more famous than somebody like him, but he wasn't the only one. There were a lot of there were probably a dozen historians and philosophers that talked about Atlantis. He's the most famous of them all, so he gets the most publicity these days. But a lot of them talked about it. So because he talked about this mother culture, this golden age, this higher civilization that existed in the middle of the Atlantic, and because the Atlantic Ocean is called the Atlantic Ocean, and because of this tradition that has existed and come down to us through the ages. It's not just something that a bunch of New Age people talked about 30 years ago. That's the idea that the media wants to put in people's minds. Oh, you're talking about Atlantis, man. You're a New Ager. No way. Go back to the Victorians. They were all talking about it. And Victorians were very, very educated, very tremendously intelligent people. And, I mean, you read a book from the 1800s, a sentence is like a page long. I have to read it four times just to understand it. Talk to a modern scholar and you're not really that impressed with his intellect.
That's I don't mean to stop you here, but that's what I always you just made such a great point, because that's what I always find is so funny when you talk to many modern people that have this very sort of like Darwinian gradualist kind of view that everything goes from like simple to complex and that's just the way it is. Yeah, okay, but have you tried to read a book from the 1700s? I mean, it's very clear that these people were very brilliant, and so you can only imagine that people maybe 1,000 years before that or 2,000 years before that were just as brilliant, if not more brilliant.
I totally agree. I totally agree. And it's funny because when I'm reading them too, I think to myself, man, I'm dumb. Because I must be dumbed down because, I feel dumbed down when I read these books. How do people think such deep thoughts? How did they write so well? How did they, the way they put the book together is incredible. I mean, their intellect is just so vast. And then you read a book from today and it's like, wow, but anyway. I mean, there's this tradition of Atlantis. It's really so rooted in history. It's in the 1400s, 1500s, 1600s, throughout history in the Western world, you see it. And then you have this concept of the flood, which all the ancient cultures had. And a flood is basically, water. And they said Atlantis was washed away with water or sank into the sea. It's similar, there's the concept of the flood, which is present in all the ancient cultures. And then you have this concept of Atlantis, which was overrun by water or created, in some way sank into a sea. So they're very, very similar. So is it possible that the flood recorded in all the ancient cultures is in some way talking about the destruction of some type of golden age or some type of higher civilization that existed before? And then if you really read what Plato talked about, he said that, you know, the peoples of Atlantis were in touch with their inner divinity. That's what made them so great. They knew who they were. They were aware of their spiritual selves. And the reason why the civilization ended was because the material side of them began to overtake the spiritual side. They were unable to contain themselves any longer. They became more materialistic. They became less in touch with the divinity within themselves. You know, so that's if you read Plato, that's what he's talking about. And that's what, you know, civilization, if you look at the Golden Age and the Silver Age and the Bronze and et cetera, a lot of these, you know, a lot of cultures talk about that. The Hindus and the Greeks certainly did. So the ages of man and that type of thing, it's going down. It's not coming up. You know, a lot of people, like you just said, you know, we're thinking that it went from caveman to space traveler. We're getting better and better. Wrong. We're getting worse and worse. You know, there was a golden age, there was a silver age, and then there was a bronze, and it's getting lower and lower. The world is getting more and more out of hand, more and more materialistic, more and more under control. And we're headed, unfortunately, for some big, you know, something big is going to happen that's going to end it. I think just like it did before, but I think it's cyclical. That's how I feel. And if you listen to Alan Watts, who translates a lot of the Hindu ideas beautifully, I think, the late Alan Watts, he's talked about that as well, how the Hindus talked about and how the Aztecs also and other cultures talked about things being cyclical. You know,
and I don't
arise and fall, an ebb and flow, which is, again, the concept of the opposites.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was actually just talking to John Major Jenkins about this. It's that overt rejection to the idea of cyclical time or things happening in cycles, rise and falls, high tides, low tides. When you look out in nature, that's all you see is cycles. You know, you see circle, circle, circle. And then when we come back to looking at our own evolution, looking at the evolution of humankind, looking at time itself, we're supposed to view this as linear. That doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever. I just can't wrap my head around why there's such a rejection to this idea. Not only to that idea, but also to the idea of a global civilization and the idea of our ancestors being extremely intelligent. I don't understand that.
Beautiful point, Marty. I mean, you make a beautiful point. You know, look at it. You know, we have the winter, spring, summer, and fall. It's a complete circle. It goes around in a complete mm-hmm. circle. The summer and the winter are the yin and the yang. The spring and the fall are the sort of in between seasons. And it's a complete circle, and it keeps going in a circle. And the ancients told us that we should look at our own lives like that. You know, we're born, we're children, you know, we're born into the world, and then we're young children, and then we reach, you know, the adulthood, and then we get old, okay? And then what comes next? We die, right? But how is that a circle? It's not really, but we have to believe that there's going to be that rebirth. We have to believe because nature tells us. Just like there's winter, spring, summer, and fall, and then winter again, or some, you know, it's the same thing with life. You know, you're born, you're young, you're middle-aged, and then you're old, and then what happens? Well, just like nature, you're going to be born again. It's going to happen again, and it's continuous, the eternal recurrence, basically. But the reason why, Marty, is because what we were talking about before is why don't the universities teach that? Because they're suppressed. They're being controlled, just like the media, just like the pharmaceuticals, just like the banks. You know, think about it. I mean, look what's happened to universities these days. The cost of an education is like $125,000. You know, back in the 70s, it was like 20 grand to get a college education. It's completely under control. I mean, think about it. If you talk to people, any parents today, what are they doing? I'm saving up for my child's college. I don't want my son to go to college. There's no way he's going to college because I know it's a scam. I know it is. You know, I realize that. And, you know, if you really want to teach your children, I think what you need to do is have them travel. You know, instead of spending $125,000 on having them sit in a classroom and have some teacher dictate to them things that they can easily learn by traveling. You know, you want to learn about China? Go to China. Look at pretty girls. Check out the wall. Eat the great food. Talk to people. Be curious about things. You know, how much can that possibly cost? $20,000? Okay, that's a big education right there. You know, and then go to Europe and then try South America. And you'll learn a lot about the world by traveling. You don't need to have that college education. I'm not really, I'm not saying it's terrible to get a college education, but I think these days it's really a scam. I think, look at the kids, these poor kids. They take these loans out, and they think they're going to get this great job and pay it back in 2 years, and now they're locked in. And it's a terrible feeling. I've talked to so many young people who are just like, I have to make that payment. I feel like I'm a slave. It's like a ball and chain on me. Some days I'm really depressed about it. I think they tricked them. I think they tricked a lot of these kids. Take the money. You'll be able to pay it back in 2, 3 years when you get a good job. I think it's sad,
And then
And
they become debt slaves, right?
yeah, they're debt slaves, And I went to college too. I went to Pace University in Manhattan. And you know what? It was good. I learned stuff, but I probably would have read those books anyway, the philosophy books, and I would have picked it up I think I learned a lot more after college than I did during college. After college, I traveled a lot and I read a tremendous amount of books and I learned different languages. And I mean, I think I learned a lot more after college. Who's to say that I wouldn't have learned that instead of going to college? Do you know what I mean? So, I mean, back then, I mean, I went to school in the early 90s, I went to college. But it wasn't nearly as expensive as it is today. It's like a racket, it's like a mafia, it's like a racket. They know, they put the message out into society that, you know what, your kid has to get a college degree. He's got to get that diploma or he'll be nothing in life. And they have all these statistics and analytics that show that when you go to college, you make a tremendous amount of money and you're happier and you have a better job. But I don't know if it really comes, I don't, I think they're just brainwashing just like everything else.
Yeah, I always like to say that I started learning as soon as I left school. You
Okay.
know, and what and I mean, just like you, one of the most profound moments of my life that really educated me, and not just studies and things like that, but a holistic, spiritual, emotional growing up, was actually spending 48 days backpacking Europe. That was just a life-changing event for me that set me on a course. And so, one of the things that I wanted to mention is that you've traveled quite a lot, so you're making a lot of these correlations that you show in the book. But people should also know that you did I mean, you did the nitty-gritty work to do. You know, you went and visited these places as well, right?
Absolutely. And you want to know something? I'm going to just take one country, Peru. You go to Peru and you talk to native guides, they're all over the truth. They know it. They know it. They're not stuck like Western scholars, like American university scholars or British scholars on this idea of, like we were talking before, a paradigm where, we were cavemen and now we're space travelers. They're into the mysteries. Native guides in Ollantaytambo, in Machu Picchu, in any of the Pisac, any of the great Inca and pre-Inca sites. If you, the best thing you could do is get some of these native guides who lived and grew up there to show you everything, because they know all the cool parts. They know all the little cool things that the Western guides or the tour guides don't know. And they say to you, I say, how did they do this? Oh, it's a big mystery. Or the Incas or the pre-Incas were in touch with themselves, they'll tell you. They were in touch with their own power. They were in touch with the power of nature. They knew who they were. They saw the God within themselves. They were, these people are really intelligent. So when you travel, you get in touch with these people that you're not going to get that in books. You're not going to find that in textbooks on that you're going to get from an American college or a British college or something like that,
You got to get it out of the book of life, right?
Yeah, it's being regulated. Here it's being regulated, and that was the biggest surprise to me when I traveled, is talking to people that grew up there and listening to what they, because lots of times they were told things by their grandparents, and their grandparents were told things by their grandparents, and so it's kind of think about it. If somebody's 70 years old and he's talking about his grandparents were told by his grandparents, that already you're talking about like 1700s right there, two sets of grandparents back goes back to like the 1700s, so and the Incas were only already in the 1500s, so you're really, you're, when you listen to people, you're really touching a lot more truth than when stuff you get out of books.
Yeah, and a lot of these, I mean, the thing that I see anyway, and I'll get your take on this, is that I think a lot of these people that delve into the mysteries and immerse themselves into esotericism and metaphysics and things like that, I think that they come to a conclusion, at least I feel like I have, that the mentality of the Incas, the mentality, the mystical mentality and mindset of Native Americans or Egyptians, those that's available to us today in our own language, in our own symbols, in our own time. This is not something that was far gone, like long, long time ago, this is how people lived. No, I think that this stuff is just as available to us right now as it was then.
It is. The hard part, though, is because we grew up watching the cartoons, watching the TV programs and the movies and exposed to this culture. In my opinion, it's a sick culture, and that's we're pretty sick today, I think. I see people having this sickness of materiality. It's just, I feel like the way we were raised and the way we've grown up, it's so ingrained in us that it's hard to throw that off. And then to go into these, you know, to even compare to somebody like an Inca shaman or somebody, a pre-Inca person who from the moment they were born were raised knowing, you know, being taught these types of things, raised under the stars. I mean, you look at the American Indians, how they lived, raised under the stars, seeing the sun go up and the moon and having to depend on these things and seeing them and knowing them. I mean, when's the last time, you know, many of us saw the stars? You know, we see it, you know, here and there, but not every single night. You know, we're out of touch. We're too, I in my opinion, there's too much materiality on us, and the way we were raised is hard now for us to go back and to find the power within ourselves and see the God within ourselves. We try, and we can, you know, there's a great deal we can do, but I don't think it's I think it's really almost impossible to equal how an ancient Egyptian or a pre-Inca person or a Mayan or somebody, you know, that lived in the ancient times, I think they were much more in touch. And I think we see that in their monuments too. And I think you know what I'm talking about. When you see when you go into the pyramid, when you see the pyramids of Egypt or the ones in Mexico or in Peru or whatever, when you're around these ancient monuments, you feel something special.
Yeah.
You feel the power. And the reason is because they had the power.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. It reminds me of when I went down to Yucatan Peninsula. I actually went to an old Mayan site. I'm not exactly sure what it was, but kind of in the middle of nowhere. And there was this pyramid there. And, you know, I walked up and I was the only person at the top. And I had this just beautiful moment of recognizing that, you know, it was the middle of the day or whatever. But it was this moment that I was like, how many of these Mayans stood on this? Or, you know, how many of these people looked up at the stars and understood their place in the cosmos? And how many people nowadays do not are not getting that moment, do not have that moment, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just a tragedy, really, you know?
Yeah. I bet you try to remember that. You know, it's a good moment to, like a mantra almost, use it like a mantra, you know, when you're down or when things don't, go back to that pyramid, go back there and relive that moment. I'll never forget the first time I saw the Great Pyramid of Egypt, and I remember standing in front of it, and I'm there right now talking to you. I'm there right now. It was just a moment of bliss. It was a moment, it was sublime, just staring at that. And I use it like a mantra when something's going wrong or I'm upset. I take a deep breath and I go back there, and when I'm there, I just have this overwhelming sense of power and peace and happiness, and just this feeling like, you know, I don't know, it's just unexplainable, but, you know, it's a good thing, and that's what the ancients had, because they built these things, and they were in touch with it.
Yeah, and now it's time to revitalize that wisdom, so.
Yeah, that's what we're here for, you know, yeah. And more and more people are waking up, and we got to keep going, and congratulations to you, Marty, on the show. I mean, this was a great interview, and you're doing a great job. You know, I'm really impressed. You know, I think you've really, you had mentioned to me that this is, you just started this, but you seem like an old hand to me.
Thanks,
talking to you. I really enjoy talking. I feel like we were just talking on the phone. I didn't feel like an interview at all. I just feel like we're hanging.
Great, man. That's exactly what I was hoping for. So I'm glad you said that. So speaking of revitalizing the ancient wisdom, a really great way to do that is to get Written in Stone by Richard Cassaro. I really love your book, man. Like I said, it just was really influential to me, and I highly recommend it to everybody. In fact, I just did an interview with my friend that I post online, and I highlighted your book and your work in that as well. So Thanks once again for joining me. Like I said, I really appreciate your work, and maybe we can talk in the future here.
Thanks, Marty. Yeah, I appreciate it. Anything, you know, anytime, anything, you know, and like I said, I'm going to be in touch with you because I'm kind of in a period right now where I'm not doing a lot of work, but I will be getting back into it shortly. It's 10:10 exactly. Remember I was telling you? It's 10:10 exactly right now. Remember I was telling you about the...
Yeah, exactly.
I will be again, and I really, because I read things, I'm like, I got to ask Marty about that. I mean, because I know you have the knack for the... for a lot of the stuff, and I totally value your opinion, and thank you so much, you know, for taking the time to speak with me.
All right, thanks, man. Richard, let's talk soon, and keep up the great work.
Okay, thanks, Marty. You too.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Our outro song is provided by the Central Oregon band Jamalia and is called The Last. I had the pleasure of being the guitar player in this band for about a year and change, and I just love this band. Andrew Hussey, the lead singer and principal songwriter, is just a fantastic songwriter, and he is backed by a great team of musicians. This track is from their latest CD simply called Jamalia, and you can purchase that on iTunes, and that's J-A-M-A-L-I-A, Jamalia. If you are in the Northwest, you can book them for shows, and their website is jamaliamusic.com. Coming up in the next few episodes of the Marty Leeds Math Magical Radio Hour, we'll feature libertarian and activist Josie the Outlaw Wales, author of The Search for Gnosis, Gabriel D. Roberts, sacred geometrician Randall Carlson, and vortex-based mathematician Randy Powell. Make sure to stay tuned and always remember, an opinion without pie is just an onion. Thanks.
Tell you I'll live for tomorrow. staring at your body. How did you go so soon? Another bright light darkened. Forget about the dark times. Don't let it be a thing of the past. No one ever told me, no one will tell you, when it will be your last. So if this is the last one, if this is the last, then let it be the best.
You've been listening to the Marty Leeds Mathemagical Radio Hour. More information about the work of Marty Leeds can be found at MartyLeeds33.com. You can download his full-length studio record, Opus Medico Musica, from iTunes or Amazon.com. And be sure and check out his books, Pi and the English Alphabet, Volume 1 and 2, and The Peacock's Tales, available at MartyLeeds33.com and Amazon. For hours of free video, check out his YouTube channel at MartyLeeds33. More information about SyncBook Press, SyncBook Radio, or SyncBook Events can be found at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast, please support it by becoming a donor. You'll find the donation links under each episode on the website and consider setting up a monthly charge. Thanks so much, and though some people think it's a piece of cake, we all know it's easy as pie.